People on the mesa understandably felt at least a moment of exhilaration, but after the news from Nagasaki, Charlotte Serber observed a palpable sense of gloom settled over the laboratory. Word soon spread that Oppie says that the atomic bomb is so terrible a weapon that war is now impossible. An FBI informant reported on August 9th that Oppie was a nervous wreck. On August 8th, 1945, as Stalin had promised Roosevelt at the Yalta Conference and confirmed to Truman at Potsdam, the Soviet Union declared war on Japan. It was a devastating event for the emperor's hawkish advisers, who had argued that the Soviet Union could be induced to help Japan obtain more lenient surrender terms than the American doctrine of unconditional surrender implied. 2 days later, a day after Nagasaki was devastated by the plutonium bomb, the Japanese government sent an offer of surrender with one condition, that the status of Japan's emperor be guaranteed. The next day, the Allies agreed to alter the terms of unconditional surrender. The authority of the emperor to rule would be subject to the supreme commander of the Allied powers. On August 14th, Radio Tokyo announced the government's acceptance of this clarification and, therewith, its surrender. The war was over. And within weeks, journalists and historians began to debate whether it might have ended on similar terms and around the same time without the bomb. The weekend after the Nagasaki bombing, Ernest Lawrence arrived in Los Alamos. He found Oppenheimer weary, morose, and consumed with qualms about what had happened. The two old friends fell to arguing about the bomb. Reminded that it had been Lawrence who had argued for a demonstration and Oppie who had blocked it, Oppie stung Lawrence with a biting remark about how Lawrence cared only for the rich and powerful. Lawrence tried to reassure his old friend that precisely because the bomb was so terrible, it would never be used again. Hardly reassured, Oppie spent much of his time that weekend drafting a final report on behalf of the scientific panel to Secretary Stimson. His conclusions were pessimistic. It is our firm opinion that no military countermeasures will be found which will be adequately effective in preventing the delivery of atomic weapons. In the future, these devices, already vastly destructive, would become only bigger and more lethal. Only 3 days after America's victory, Oppenheimer was telling Stimson and the president that the nation had no defense against these new weapons. We are not only unable to outline a program that would assure to this nation for the next decades hegemony in the field of atomic weapons— We are equally unable to ensure that such hegemony, if achieved, could protect us from the most terrible destruction. We believe that the safety of this nation, as opposed to its ability to inflict damage on an enemy power, cannot lie wholly or even primarily in its scientific or technical prowess. It can be based only on making future wars impossible. That week he personally hand-carried the letter to Washington, D.C., where he met with Vannevar Bush and George Harrison, Stimson's aide in the War Department.
It was a bad time, he reported to Lawrence at the end of August. Too early for clarity. He had tried to explain the futility scientists felt concerning any further work on the atomic bomb. He implied that the bomb should be made illegal, just like poison gases after the last war. But he found no encouragement from the people he saw in Washington. I had the fairly clear impression from the talks that things had gone most badly at Potsdam, and that little or no progress had been made in interesting the Russians in collaboration or control. In fact, he doubted that any serious effort in this direction had been made. Before Oppie left Washington, he gloomily noted that the president had issued a gag order on any further disclosures about the atomic bomb, and Secretary of State Burns sent word, after reading Oppie's letter to Truman, that in the present international situation there was no alternative to pushing the MED, Manhattan Engineer District, program full steam ahead. Oppie returned to New Mexico even more depressed than when he had left. A few days later, Robert and Kitty went alone to Perro Caliente, their cabin near Los Pinos, and spent a week trying to sort out the consequences of the incredibly intense last 2 years. It was the first time they had spent any real time alone in 3 years. Robert took the opportunity to catch up on some of his personal correspondence, replying to letters from old friends, many of whom had only recently learned from the newspapers what he had been doing during the war. He wrote his former teacher, Herbert Smith, "You will believe that this undertaking has not been without its misgivings. They are heavy on us today, when the future, which has so many elements of high promise, is yet only a stone's throw from despair." Similarly, he wrote his Harvard roommate Frederick Bernheim, "We are at the ranch now, in an earnest but not too sanguine search for sanity. There would seem to be some great headaches ahead."